The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Money FM 89.3, best of prime time.
This is Prime Time on Money FM 89.3. I'm Rachel Kelly. Now, according to a recent Bloomberg report, Singapore-based hedge funds' assets under management have almost doubled since 2016 to $48.7 billion in 2020. And while the solution in the past may have been to recruit talent from traditional hubs such as Europe or the US, they're now looking to boost their local base and starting young. In fact, as young as 16 years old. To tell us more, we're joined by David Ramley, journalist at Bloomberg and the journalist who wrote that particular report. David, thank you so much for joining us today.
No worries. Thanks for having me.
Wonderful to have you on the show again. So David, you know, I was thinking when I read your article, at the age of 16, I was probably rebelling in some form of, or another. I'm sure you're thinking about what you were doing as a 16-year-old teenager. But these days, teenagers seem to be making better use of their time. And in your report, you gave the example of a 16-year-old who's actually joined a hedge fund. Can you tell me a little bit more about that? How did that happen?
Well, she was a student at RGS. And as you suggest, unlike me, she was very active about pursuing her careers and her opportunities. So one of the things that the school does, which is quite impressive, is it has an internship and basically a program where it connects with people in the various industries across Singapore society. One of those is finance. So Modular, which is the hedge fund that we spoke to, they had an opportunity with RGS partly because one of their employees is an RGS graduate as well, an alumni. And they did a competition where 10, well, in this case, 11 applicants tried to get that one internship. And Yike Chow was the one who won it. She earned it and managed to spend a few weeks there going over some of the activities from the boring to the exciting, such as spreadsheets and looking at P&L to actually participating in and watching the weekly meeting that they have where portfolio managers actually have to pitch their ideas and then try and survive the crucible of fire of other portfolio managers trying to shoot holes in it and seeing if there's any issues with it.
And I'm assuming she's looking at a career in finance, so this would give her a firm foundation in that.
She's definitely looking at a career in finance. She still hasn't completely made up her mind if hedge funds is going to be the place that she ends up, but it's certainly more likely now since she had this experience. And this is the key. Hedge funds, just like a lot of areas in active asset management, aren't a normal place for Singaporeans to go to, partly because the industry is so small. Finance in Singapore is, of course, massive. You know, you have banks and wealth managers and accountants and all this sort of stuff. But when you talk about hedge funds, Singapore is already smaller than Hong Kong. And both Hong Kong and Singapore combined would be a tiny drop in the ocean compared to New York or London. So it's really an industry that's relatively nascent and will grow quite rapidly in the years to come.
These kind of internships are really building up that future base, as you mentioned, when it comes to developing local manpower and talent within the hedge fund industry. And, you know, earlier on at the start of the report, I cited a figure that you mentioned in your article, and that was that assets under management for hedge funds has almost doubled since 2016, with the 4 years up to 2020. So obviously more manpower is needed then. So what else is being done to develop that local manpower base? I mean, not everybody is going to be hiring 16-year-old interns, but let's talk about retraining older workers. Is that something that we're seeing in the market?
It certainly is. We've got a couple of organizations that sort of spearhead that. The Wealth Management Institute was spun out of NTU. It's quite a high-powered training body that takes established professionals and tries to get them ready for, you know, wealth and asset management. So, you know, you're taking lawyers and existing private wealth bankers, and you're giving them the skills they need to just plug into a hedge fund or a family office. On top of that, the IMAS, which is the industry body for investment management, they have their iLearn platform, I believe it's called, which teaches people how to take on the skills they need for the new era of finance. You know, for example, one of their classes, I believe, is about sustainable investing. So trying to give people the skills they need for that. But it's also important to say that, you know, not everybody is going to be suited to active asset management. You can't take any random person who worked in the finance sector and no longer has a job and put them into the space, just like you can't make everybody into a bus driver or a doctor. You know, it, some things have certain aptitudes, and not everyone's going to be, I don't want to say cut out for it, but not everyone will be well suited to it.
I see. We're speaking with David Ramley, journalist at Bloomberg. And David, I just want to rewind to that point you made about training and sustainability, because hedge funds are not only looking to groom the next generation, but they're also looking to build a better future for the next generation. In one of your recent articles, you also spoke about Temasek Bag to ABC World Asia's chief executive officer, David Heng, outlining his vision for the $405 million impact investment fund. And this was his first interview, I believe, since taking the role at its inception in 2019. What else did he have to say?
Basically, he was talking about the roadmap that they have for investment opportunities. You know, they have $405 million to invest. They've invested $98 million so far across five investments. So they have quite a bit of runway to go. They've got a team of about 14 people. His main message was that he wants to get as much money as possible into the impact investment space, because if you can somehow marry getting a good return with also doing good, then ultimately one hopes that finance and the world becomes a slightly better place. We're not just talking about environmental aspects, of course. Some people perhaps don't agree with putting a lot of money into certain types of investments. But, you know, if you talk about healthcare, if you talk about scientific development, microfinancing, these are things that are a bit more universally acceptable. So one of the other messages that I got was he believes, and this is, there are essentially two schools of thought in impact investment. He believes that getting a market rate of return, that is the same kind of return that you'll get in other segments, non-impact segments, is important to getting more capitalists, more funds, more investors into the impact investment space. Some people disagree with that. They think that it should be impact first rather than finance first. But it's interesting to see, you know, these guys take a stand on that issue.
But we do invest for a multiple number of reasons. A return on investment, obviously, is one of them. So to see both of those married hand in hand makes sense. Now, he also said that each potential investment must improve on at least one of five key themes, which represent business opportunities of more than $4 trillion. Which sectors was he talking about here, David? And where are the opportunities?
Yes, that's right. Well, the five areas they've identified are climate and water solutions, there's healthcare and education, there's sustainable food and agriculture, financial and digital inclusion, and the last one is smart and livable cities. I mean, if you look at some of the examples that they've invested in so far, there's Sunseap Group, that I think a lot of people know as one of the larger solar energy providers in this part of the world. There's also a Vietnamese dental care chain called Kim Dental. And you can think of them as sort of the Raffles Dental of Vietnam. You know, they have a string of very slick, modern dental chains that service sort of the aspirational middle class of Vietnam.
And, you know, I was just looking at one of your other articles as well, because Mr. Heng isn't alone, is he? We've also seen a number of hedge funds pair bets on alternative energy after a 2020 surge. We're talking about lithium, though, and uranium. How green are these alternative energy bets? And what kind of returns are we talking about, David?
So how green these alternative energy bets are is up for debate. I mean, if you dig uranium out of the ground and you use it for uranium energy and then you have to dispose of depleted uranium, then of course that's a long-term problematic issue. But at the same time, it doesn't emit any carbon. You know, it's relatively green from that perspective. So I can't answer the question of how clean it is, because that's something that society has to grapple with. And when it comes to lithium ion batteries, you know, the consumption of not just lithium, but nickel and a range of other metals to produce batteries is massive. At the end of the day, you're still using energy and chemicals, dig it out of the ground and process it and turn it into something else. But again, that's something that you then need to balance it against the idea of coal or you know, oil-based power plants, and whether or not that's actually green for the planet. In terms of the return, certainly in 2020, green energy was producing fantastic returns for certain funds. In fact, it was one of the few areas in ESG, sustainable investing, that really outperformed. But also part of that would have been because a lot of governments are trying to shift their economies away from dirty fossil fuels and towards green energy. Mm. So you have a lot of grants, you have a lot of incentive programs. You know, the US is currently looking at replacing its petrol-based cars with electric cars, at least in the government sense. So all of these are relatively artificial surges in these spaces. So that's why it's going to be difficult to tell if they're sustainable for the very long term, but certainly in the short to medium, it's looking decent. Even so, you've seen Tesla have a lot of volatility recently, so there's no sure thing in any market.
Wonderful. Well, David, thank you so much for joining us again today and for sharing all those updates with us.
No worries. Thank you so much for having me on.
Thank you. We've been speaking with David Ramley, journalist at Bloomberg, right here on Money FM 89.3.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SBH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.